Nearly 30 Palestinians have been killed in the latest Israeli airstrikes across Gaza. One of the attacks hit near a Jordanian makeshift hospital. Medical centers have been the prime target of the regime's air campaign that has killed almost 19,700 Palestinians dead since October the 7th. Israel has reportedly informed Qatar about its willingness for a new ceasefire in Gaza as the international pressure mounts on the regime to end its genocidal war on the besieged Palestinian territory. Malaysia has banned Israeli-owned ships and other vessels heading to Israel from docking at all domestic ports. Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim, in a statement, said the restrictions are a response to Israel's violation of international law through continuous massacres and atrocities against Palestinians. He said the restrictions are effective immediately. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Dozens of Palestinians have lost their lives in the latest Israeli airstrikes in Gaza. The victims were killed in airstrikes in different parts of Gaza, including Deir al-Balah, as well as Jabalia. The death toll now tops 19,700 since the war began on October the 7th. Israeli forces have raided Al-Ahli Hospital, knocking it out of service and abducting staff members and patients. It was the last functioning medical facility in northern Gaza. Internet and phone services have been cut off in Gaza as well due to Israeli attacks. Meanwhile, two Israeli soldiers have been killed and 29 others wounded in battles with resistance forces over the past 24 hours. Israel has reportedly signaled readiness for a new ceasefire in Gaza as the international pressure mounts on the regime to end its genocidal war on the besieged Palestinian territory. According to Israeli media, Tel Aviv has informed Qatar about its willingness for a temporary truce. The regime will also allow the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza in exchange for the release of Israeli captives. Meanwhile, Hamas chief Ismail Haniyeh is in Egypt for truce talks. A previous agreement, mediated by Qatar and Egypt, led to a week-long truce at the end of November. During that period, Hamas freed 86 captives in exchange for the release of 240 Palestinian women and children. The regime unleashed its war for the stated goal of releasing its captives and eliminating Hamas. None of the goals, however, have been achieved. Senior Hamas official Saleh al-Aruri has talked to Press TV about the Gaza war. He says the movement had proposed the release of all Palestinian prisoners in exchange for the release of all Israeli captives, including civilian men. But the regime refused that. Saleh al-Aruri says that the refusal was the main reason behind the collapse of talks to extend a ceasefire reached last month.
One of the goals of operations of October the 7th was to bring the captives with us to Gaza Strip. There has been a lot of talk going on about the presence of women and kids among the captives. What I want to explain here is that the decision inside Al-Qassam Brigade and other resistance movements in general was the arrest of Israeli soldiers. So the attack targeted the military division. Some of the personnel were killed while some others were arrested. From the first day, we said we do not mean to keep the civilians, but we have women and kids in Israeli jails, and they must be freed. This is non-negotiable. The exchange deal is something else. From the first day of the conflict, we said it clearly that the goal of keeping the Israeli military personnel was to free our captives who have been inside Israeli jails for tens of years. We said it very clearly. We were ready to hand over all the prisoners and the corpses in exchange for all of our captives and the corpses with the Israelis who used to kidnap our martyrs in the battlefield. Therefore, from the beginning, we wanted all for all. But the Israeli regime did not reply. They were concentrating on the women and kids. Even when we proposed the release of some civilian males, not soldiers, they refused the deal, saying we do not want them.
Head of Hamas Political Bureau Ismail Haniyeh says the Palestinian resistance remains firm in its battle against the Israeli military as the regime's genocidal war in Gaza enters its 75th day. Haniyeh, in a meeting with Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian in the Qatari capital, underlined that Israel keeps targeting Gaza from air, land, and sea. However, he explained resistance fighters remain strong and determined in the battlefield and have inflicted heavy losses on Israeli forces. He said although tens of thousands of Gazans have been killed or wounded in the Israeli onslaught, they have put up a stiff resistance against the invaders. And he also thanked the Iranian foreign minister for following up on the Gaza developments. The meeting came during a fourth visit by the top Iranian diplomat to Doha as part of efforts to muster support for Palestinians. Moving on, Malaysia has banned Israeli-owned ships and other vessels heading to Israel from docking at all domestic ports in reaction to the regime's bloodshed in the Gaza Strip. Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim, in a statement, said that his government's decision comes into immediate effect. Any vessels en route to Israel will also be banned from loading cargo. The statement said the restrictions are a response to Israel's violation of international law through continuous massacres and atrocities against Palestinians. Anti-Israeli campaign group the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, or BDS movement had urged Kuala Lumpur to stop providing Israel with shipping services. Malaysia is a strong supporter of the Palestinian cause and does not have diplomatic ties with Israel. Anwar has also refused to bow to Western pressure to cut ties with the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. In West Asia, the Yemeni army has also conducted operations against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea in recent weeks.
This is a firm response to Israel's genocide and aggression against Palestinians. It has been about 2.5 months since Israel launched its deadly onslaught on the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. Muslim countries missed no chance to deplore the Israeli crimes verbally, but there were few, including Yemen, that firmly stood in solidarity with defenseless Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. After carrying out drone and missile strikes on Israeli targets, Yemen's armed forces have now been targeting Israel-bound vessels in waters around their country. The army has time and again stated it would stop its operations if Israel stops its aggression and ends its blockade on Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces have also refuted claims about targeting ships moving toward other destinations. All vessels except Israel-bound ones can safely sail through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. As usual, Israel's main backer, the U.S., has been trying to reverse the impact of the Yemeni operations by announcing the formation of a maritime coalition under the pretext that it would protect the transit in the Red Sea. But Washington's main goal is to protect Israel's interest. However, Yemen's Ansarullah has issued strong warning to the U.S. Mohammed al-Bukhaiti, a senior Ansarullah official, says the newly formed coalition will get a painful response if it violates the sovereignty of the Arab country. But how significant the Yemeni operations in the Red Sea are? In recent weeks, Yemeni naval forces have targeted several vessels sailing through the Red Sea toward Israel. Their primary goal has been to exert economic pressure on Tel Aviv, and they have been rather successful. Several major companies have suspended their shipments to and from Israel in the wake of Yemen's operations in the Red Sea. This has dealt a heavy blow to Israel's economy, with the latest reports indicating that the port of Eilat is hardly hit as the result of this disruption.
The non-arrival of ships to Eilat means that there is no income for the port, while the fixed expenses for its maintenance and operation remain the same, and we have a substantial negative flow.
The almost complete halt to the arrival of ships to Eilat has led to an 80% fall in the port's profits. This is while reports say that Egypt's Suez Canal has seen no harm to its maritime activities during Yemen's operations against Israel-bound ships. The Red Sea is a strategic trade route connecting Asia to Europe through the Suez Canal. About 12% of global trade passes through the Red Sea, including 30% of global container traffic. The disruptions in this area have had a direct impact on global economy. Now, cargo ships traveling from Asia to Europe have to sail around the African continent. This has increased the transit time and led to higher freight rates and delays. Also, shipping insurance costs have jumped by tens of thousands of dollars a day, and oil prices have gone up as well. To sum up, the international community has been unable to stop the Israeli crimes against Palestinians through political means. However, it seems Yemenis have employed a successful tactic to pressurize Israel.
Israeli forces have killed a Palestinian in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil and arrested nearly 30 others during new raids. Our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil joined us earlier with more details.
This morning, Israeli forces raided the city of Al-Khalil. The Israeli troops stormed the house of one of the Palestinian martyrs, Al-Qawasmi, who carried out a shooting at one of the military checkpoints between Beit Lahem and Al-Khalil. And at that time, three Palestinians had been shot and killed. Today, the Israeli forces raided the home. They took the measurement of the house, and this means that the Israeli military will be destroying the home of this Palestinian mortar. In the town of Tamun near Tobas, the Israeli forces raided the Tamun. Clashes had taken place between Palestinians and the Israeli forces, and at least one Palestinian was shot by the Israeli forces. 16-year-old Palestinian was seriously wounded by the Israeli forces. In Al-Yamun, in Jenin, two Palestinians had been wounded in the clashes and the military raid that aimed to arrest Palestinians accused by the Israelis for being wanted Palestinians. In Asira al-Shamaliya near Nablus, a number of Palestinians had been wounded, according to paramedics, during the military raid as well. In Sa'ir, northern Al-Khalil, the Palestinian prisoners community, the Palestinian Prisoners Society, said that at least three Palestinians had been detained by the Israeli forces from Sa'ir near Al-Khalil. One of those who had been wanted, who had been detained, was wounded during the military operation.
The head of the International Committee of the Red Cross has slammed the global inaction over Israel's crimes against Palestinians in Gaza.
I have started speaking of moral failure because every day this continues. Will be a day more in where the international community hasn't proven capable of ending such high levels of suffering, and this will have an impact on generations, not only in Gaza but beyond Gaza, because these images remain.
Paul Jarek was speaking to journalists in the Swiss city of Geneva following a trip to Gaza. The ICRC president called for a ceasefire in the Palestinian territory, clear the way for the delivery of humanitarian aid and a new prisoner swap deal. She stressed that the current level of strikes on Gaza make a meaningful humanitarian response extremely difficult.
It's not only about our own security, our own staff.
With announcements of new weapons for Israel, Washington continues to ignore worldwide demands for peace in Palestine. Polls show that inside the U.S., a majority of young voters have now turned against the colonialist project of Zionism. Ramin Mazari has more from Chicago.
The United States continues to double down on their support for Israel. In a visit to Tel Aviv, the U.S. Secretary of Defense promised more munitions, tactical vehicles, and air defense systems, and said he wasn't there to dictate timelines for peace.
The United States will remain Israel's closest friend in the world. As I've said repeatedly, our support for Israel's security remains unshakable. And it always will.
For over 2 months, Israel has blocked deliveries of water, fuel, food, and medicine, leading top NGO Human Rights Watch to say that Israel, quote, is using starvation of civilians as a method of warfare. Indiscriminate airstrikes have destroyed 20% of Gaza's buildings. Israel's war crimes have caused their support to plummet in a country traditionally dominated by pro-Zionist sentiment. Polls say just 30% of the United States wants to send Israel more weapons. Another poll revealed that a majority of Americans aged 18 to 24 have effectively become anti-Zionists, with 51% agreeing that the long-term answer is for, quote, Israel to be ended and given to Hamas and the Palestinians.
Victory has never seemed so close, because this idea of the invincible Israel was shattered on October 7th. And now the so-called axis of resistance is now including people of the world, right? It's no longer just the axis of resistance in the Middle East. It's the people in the diaspora. It's, you know, people who have a conscience in Brazil, in India, where, you know, trade unions are also demanding to divest and to boycott Israel. The axis of resistance has expanded to almost the entire world.
Despite recent talk in the United States mainstream media that Israeli atrocities are causing a rift between Washington and Tel Aviv, Others believe history's actions speak louder than words.
And I think this is where we have to have a class analysis. It's absolutely in the interest of the 1%. In fact, they're desperate because they have relied on Israel for 75 years as like a forward military force, first for the UK and then now for the, you know, for the last 60 years, my whole life, you know, for the US, Israel's been their unsinkable aircraft carrier.
Also discussed between the U.S. Secretary of Defense and Tel Aviv was a transition to a so-called next phase of the war against the long brutalized Palestinians. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
The U.S. Security Council has held another meeting to discuss the Gaza war. Addressing the meeting, the Russian ambassador made a blistering attack on the U.S. for vetoing the Council's resolutions that call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The Russian diplomat added that the U.S. veto of the latest Security Council resolution blocked the world body's efforts to end the bloodbath in Gaza. The United Arab Emirates envoy also spoke at the meeting, slamming Israel's deadly attacks against Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank.
We are now coming to the end of what was the deadliest year in the occupied Palestinian territory. This should be a wake-up call that the current status quo cannot be allowed to continue. Meanwhile, less than 100 kilometers away from Gaza, people in the West Bank are living in a situation of violence and fear that has escalated over the past 2 months. Since 7 October, the number of people killed in the West Bank has increased. 278 Palestinians, including 70 children, have lost their lives. This is more than half of the total number since the beginning of the year, in a year that was already witnessing unprecedented levels of violence.
Britain's UN envoy also addressed the meeting. James Kariuki slammed settler violence and the expansion of Israeli settlements across the occupied West Bank.
We are banning those responsible for settler violence from entering the UK to make sure our country cannot be a home for people who commit these intimidating acts. And we reiterate our call on Israel to immediately and completely stop all settlement activities in the occupied Palestinian territory.
Israeli forces and settlers have increased their violent attacks against Palestinians in the West Bank since the regime launched its genocidal war in Gaza more than 2 months ago. The regime is also pressing ahead with its settlement expansion plans, despite growing international calls to abandon such activities. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's goodbye for now.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Climate experts are saying the failure of COP28 summit to phase out fossil fuels and a lack of unambiguous statements from the summit is a tragedy for the planet and for our future. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story. The failure of COP28 summit to call for a phase-out of fossil fuels is devastating and dangerous, given the urgent need for action to tackle the climate crisis, according to scientists. One called it a tragedy for the planet and for our future, while another said it was the dream outcome for the fossil fuel industry. The United Nations Climate Summit ended in Dubai on Wednesday, 13th of December, with a compromise deal that called for a transition away from fossil fuels. The stronger term phase-out of fossil fuels had been backed by 130 of the 198 countries negotiating in Dubai, but was blocked by petrostates, chief among them Saudi Arabia. The deal was hailed as historic as it was the first sighting of fossil fuels, the root cause of the climate crisis, in 30 years of climate negotiations. But scientists say the agreement contained many loopholes and did not match the severity of the climate emergency. The lack of an agreement to phase out fossil fuels was devastating, according to Professor Michael Mann, a climatologist and geophysicist at the University of Pennsylvania in the United States. Professor Michael Mann said to transition away from fossil fuels was weak tea at best. It's like promising your doctor that you will transition away from donuts after being diagnosed with diabetes. Dr. Magdalena Skipper, the editor-in-chief of the science journal Nature, said, "The science is perfectly clear. Fossil fuels must go. World leaders will fail their people and the planet unless they accept this reality." An editorial in Nature said, "The failure over the phase-out of fossil fuels was more than a missed opportunity. It was dangerous and ran counter to the core goals laid down in the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement, limiting global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels." "The climate doesn't care who emits greenhouse gases," the editorial continued. "There is only one viable path forward, and that is for everybody to phase out almost all fossil fuels as quickly as possible." Sir David King, the chair of the Climate Crisis Advisory Group and a former UK chief scientific advisor, said, "The wording of the deal in Dubai is feeble. Ensuring 1.5 degrees Celsius remains viable will require total commitment to a range of far-reaching measures, including full fossil fuel phase-out." There was a chasm between the stark statement of the emissions cuts needed and the action proposed to deliver those reductions, he said. The COP28 summit text recognizes there is a need for deep, rapid and sustained reductions in greenhouse gas emissions to stay in line with 1.5 degrees Celsius. But then it lists a whole bunch of efforts that don't have a chance of achieving that. The scientists said the loopholes included the call to accelerate carbon capture and carbon storage to trap emissions from burning fossil fuels, an option that can play a minor role at best. Dr. Friederike Otto, a climatologist at Imperial College, University of London, said, "Until fossil fuels are phased out, the world will continue to become a more dangerous, more expensive and more uncertain place to live. With every vague verb, with every empty promise in that final text, millions more people will enter the front line of climate change and many will die." Professor Martin Ziegert, a polar scientist and deputy vice-chancellor at the University of Exeter, said, "The science is perfectly clear. COP28, by not making a clear declaration to stop fossil fuel burning, is a tragedy for the planet and for our future. The world is heating faster and more powerfully than the COP response to deal with it." Professor Mike Berners-Lee, an expert on carbon footprinting at Lancaster University, said, "COP28 is the fossil fuel industry's dream outcome because it looks like progress, but it isn't." Dr. Anella Cantarello, a senior lecturer in sustainability science at Bournemouth University, said, "It is hugely disappointing to see how a very small number of countries have been able to put short-term national interests ahead of the future of the people and nature." Dr. James Dyke, an associate professor in Earth System Dynamics at the University of Exeter, said, "COP28 needed to deliver an unambiguous statement. While the agreement's call for need to transition away from fossil fuels is welcome, it has numerous caveats and loopholes that risk rendering it meaningless. That this deal has been hailed as a landmark is more a measure of previous failures than any step change when it comes to the increasingly urgent need to rapidly stop burning coal, oil and gas. The scientists' comments echoed those of Anne Rasmussen, the lead negotiator for the Alliance of Small Island States Group, whose speech at the closing of the COP28 summit won a standing ovation from delegates. It is not enough for us to reference the science and then make agreements that ignore what the science is telling us we need to do. Climate science was at the heart of a row that dominated the first week of the summit after The Guardian revealed comments by the COP28 president, Sultan Al Jaber. Sultan Al Jaber said, "There is no science out there or no scenario out there that says that the phase-out of fossil fuel is what's going to achieve 1.5-degree rise in temperature." Sultan Al-Jaber later said, "I have said over and over, the phase-down and the phase-out of fossil fuels is inevitable. In fact, it is essential." Dr. Lisa Schipper, a professor of development geography at the University of Bonn in Germany, said, "The early statement by the COP28 president about the lack of science behind phasing out of fossil fuels sent shockwaves to scientists, especially those who had contributed to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the most recent report, since the science in the report is so clear, fossil fuels need to be phased out completely to prevent a point of no return." Professor Mann said, "COP rules needed to be reformed, for example, by allowing supermajorities to vote through decisions over the objections of holdout petrostates and by barring oil executives, such as Sultan Al Jaber, who runs the United Arab Emirates State Oil Company, from presiding over future summits." The French broadcaster France 24, France 24, has also covered the same story. A United Nations climate deal that approved the call to transition away from fossil fuels has been hailed as a major milestone and a cause for at least cautious optimism. But many climate scientists are saying the joyful sentiments of world leaders did not accurately reflect the limited ambition of the agreement. Professor Michael Mann, a climatologist and geophysicist at the University of Pennsylvania in the United States, criticized the vagueness of the fossil fuel statement, which has no firm accountable boundaries for how much countries should do and by what timeline. "The agreement to transition away from fossil fuels was weak tea at best," he told Agence France-Presse. "It's like promising your doctor that you will transition away from donuts after being diagnosed with diabetes. The lack of an agreement to phase out fossil fuels was devastating." Professor Michael Mann called for a substantial reform of the COP rules, for example, permitting supermajorities of countries to approve decisions over the objections of holdout petrostates, such as Saudi Arabia, and barring oil executives, such as COP28 President Sultan Al Jaber, from presiding over future summits. "Mend it, don't end it," he said. "We still need to continue with the COP summits. They are our only multilateral framework for negotiating global climate policies. But the failure of COP28 to achieve any meaningful progress at a time when our window of opportunity to limit global warming below catastrophic levels is closing is a source of great concern." The short-term financial interests of a few have again won over the health, lives and livelihoods of most people living on this planet. With every vague verb, with every empty promise in the final text, millions more people will enter the front line of climate change and many will die.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special,
There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Ladies' Favorite Program, Muslim Lady. Well, once more, I'm here as your host. I'm Asma, at your service. And today, we have Brother Mustafa with us as the guest. Assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome.
Alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me. Yes, I'm Mustafa, and I'm also a student here. I am researching psychology and Islamic studies here in
Paul. That's very great. Thank you for being here. So one of the features of a mother is to be patient. So there are many girls who are not having some special traits before they become mothers, before they become a wife, before they become a partner of another person in a communion, in a respectful communion that is called family. And now one of those traits is patience, which is very much important. Not many girls have that, but then as they become mother, when you see them, when you look at their life in retrospect, you see how much of change they have been through after they have become mothers. Like you see that girl who was so impatient and who was so reckless, now she's more logical, she's more patient. And the thing that how she has been through that much of change and how she started to gain that much of patience is very interesting.
Definitely. Of course, you know, having children or being in that role completely changes a person's life, like way of thinking and lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even the Holy Quran mentions how difficult it is for a mother to sort of, you know, raise that child, to wean them. And for that, God has given them like this sort of incredible position, you know, in the hereafter, just for, you know, bringing a child into this world.
Yeah.
So, of course, that would definitely make them patient. And I was trying to think of, you know, how I can sort of make this a more practical or maybe more interesting for listeners. You know, one idea that came to my mind is that what are some practical things that patients can help with, right? Where can patients sort of help you sort of not make mistakes? And one of the things like we learn about in psychology is that we try to use different techniques to change sort of human behavior, right?
Yeah.
There's a whole topic called like modification behavior. And let's say if you go to a psychologist and you say, hey, you know, my son or my child is having this issue, they will tell you, okay, like, why don't you apply this technique? What happens, unfortunately, when we don't know those techniques, what do we run out of, do you think? We run out of patience.
Of course.
Maybe we run out of patience. When we run out of patience, what do you think happens next? If you do have a sister or a child, right? And they were to sort of misbehave, right? Let's say they come home, they're less than 7 years old, and they come home and they're misbehaving. Let's say they're picking their nose, they're swearing.
Yeah.
What do you think should be the reaction of a parent? What do you think should be done there?
I have a younger brother who once was a little child. So as for me, I'm going to tolerate for one time, twice, and three times, but then eventually I'm going to explode.
Okay, so that's exactly why we're saying patience, it comes in handy here, right? Islam, and from a psychological point of view, they would say that the initial reaction is to completely ignore that child's behavior.
Yeah.
So completely ignore what they're doing as if they have done nothing. Right? A lot of times what happens is when a child comes in doing those things, parents will start like disciplining that child.
Yeah,
right?
Now I have a question.
Yeah.
Since you have children, do you think men are more patient or women?
Absolutely, men are not as patient as women. There's like no comparison. Okay?
Yeah, that's the thing. Ladies are more patient.
100%. Like women have so much more patience, especially when it comes to children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think God's placed that in them.
Exactly. I just wanted to mention this. God has put this into her nature because she's going to be a mother. And a mother always tolerates everything.
In fact, I'm sure we have narrations which say something like, you know, a woman has like three times more patience than a man. You know, she has 10 times more patience than
So there are some things that are related to her nature.
Definitely.
Like being a mother, like having too much of patience, like being the supportive one.
So that nature comes out even more when they're in that role, right? When finally, when they're in that role of a mother, then that sort of enhances their inner, sort of develops their patience. In
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
But that's what I'm saying. Patience is such a huge tool in just in terms of parenting, that it's used in psychology as a way of like changing, you know, children's behavior. One of the things that you said, you know, you asked as a father. Now, some of the things, by the way, that we're talking about, they're not just related to women. They're related to everyone, right? They're related, yeah. Even as a father, you have to do these things. It's not as if...
So, but since we're talking to Muslim ladies,
I know.
Want to honor them more and
of
more.
Of course. But I'm trying to say it's important for everyone.
Yeah.
So another thing that we talk about in psychology from this angle, you know, from being patients, is that a mother, for example, they say should be a mountain of love for their yeah. children, right? In the sense that there's these red lines at home that you should have that should never be crossed. And mm-hmm. that's like love and respect.
Exactly. Okay? Yeah.
By the way, these are things that I didn't know. You know, these things that I'm mentioning are things that I've actually learned when I was here and studying. Mm-hmm. You might think for some people, these things might be like normal or common sense,
yeah.
but I actually had to learn them.
So let me just test your patience and tell you that it's time for break and we
okay,
have to
sure.
go for a short break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So welcome back, Muslim ladies. We are talking about patience and how we develop that trait in ourselves as mothers. Considering the mothers related to the children, we would say that these children are going to be the tools that are going to teach them how to develop many good traits, one of them being patience. So it has got so much of difficulties to raise up a child, to bring up a child, to tolerate all the difficulties that mm-hmm. might occur in the process. But then it's a way of getting more developed, of flourishing more of your human self.
Definitely. You know, the way we sort of sometimes view marriage and having children, I don't think it's always the correct view. For example, our teacher was telling us that, you know, sometimes we see marriage as just a means of like sort of as fulfilling our physical needs. I think this is a wrong sort of idea given to people about marriage, right? Similarly with children, I would say, like the whole point of marriage and children is self-development and growth.
Exactly.
There's no, like you cannot have self-growth anywhere else like as you can with children or as being in that role of a mother.
Yeah.
Right? You're dealing, like you're raising another human being. Unfortunately, there's in some Western countries, you know, you may even hear some really extreme cases where moms have killed their children.
That's unbelievable.
And it is unbelievable. But, you know, they're living really difficult lives there, right?
Yeah.
Even in our society, I would say a lot of women are living difficult lives. And unfortunately, I would say even for someone, we see that even someone who doesn't have problems, who's not working sometimes, our moms may not go to the extreme of killing their children, I would say. But due to lack of patience, they may solve the problem in the wrong way. For example, they may just give their phone to their child and say, hey, here you go. Just play video games. Right here. Just
yeah.
go look at YouTube videos or whatever.
Yeah.
Just go look at cartoons. That's what a lot of us do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just leaving your child to the video or, you know, the TV, it's definitely not good for them. That shows your lack of patience then.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's, unfortunately, I can tell you, it may cause even more harm to the child in the long run and to your family.
Of course, yes. And
yeah.
they are not going to learn about the good features of a human being, like being so protective of each other, like devoting time for each other, talking to each other, sharing some emotion with each other. If a mother does not do that to her child, then that child, where is she or he going to learn that?
Right. They're going to be learning that from like all the wrong places then,
yeah.
right? They're learning that from cartoons and they're learning that from that movies. And, you know, it's even more serious than that. I don't know how many people realize how many children today have mental illnesses, right? Children starting from the age of 7, 8, 9, like 10. Like psychologists are having parents come in with these children at that young age. Why is that happening? A lot of it has to do with, for example, just the phone and just the internet.
Yeah, and with their childhood, because this this trick to give them the phone or anything else to make them engaged in it happens when they are so much of a child, like at the age of 7 or even before that. And right this time, right from the year 1 to year 7 of their mental development, all the basics are going to happen.
And, you know, don't think that a 7 or 8-year-old will not search for, like, the wrong things.
Yeah.
They do search for the wrong things because they've learned it from some older friend or, you know. So we're seeing that, you know, a woman's patience is so important, you know, that, yes, it develops through the child. And if it's not developed in the proper way, it can cause serious harm then to the child and to the family.
So again, we come back to the point where we said before you bring up a child, you have to go through too much of knowledge and education. You have to educate yourself. And then when you become a wife, when you become in the process of becoming a mother, then you have to learn to have patience and you have to learn to devote time for this child of yours because it is going to be a means for your development as well.
Yeah, and you know, a friend of mine used to say that having children is one of those things where you have children, you're given a child without a manual, right?
Yeah.
You're not given a manual, for example, although I would disagree with him in the sense that today's studies and today's, you know, for example, books related to parenting, you do have manuals available to you. I didn't do this myself, right? I wish I had, and whoever's listening, if you haven't had kids, go out there and read those books. They're really helpful. You may be making mistakes that you don't know. Go and read those psychology books. Go and like listen to those lectures. They will pay off.
Exactly. There are too much of lectures and there are too much of documentaries and that. I guess all of them could come handy and so fruitful.
Yeah. One final thing I would say related to this topic, you know, is that not all psychologists or not all therapists are in the sense good or reliable. And what I mean by
exactly.
that is that if you find a psychologist who only has a Western way of thinking, then they may end up like giving you the wrong advice.
Yeah.
Because they may end up giving you drugs that you don't need, right? So whoever you're seeking advice from, definitely make sure that, you know, they're following Islamic principles. They know, you know.
They respect human soul as well as their
they respect
just
the
mental
human soul.
Needs.
Because I've heard, unfortunately, I've heard horror stories where, you know, people have gone to like certain psychologists and then they've just told them to do like haram things, mm-hmm. you know, forbidden things.
Yeah.
Because that's normal in Western psychology to do those things. But
exactly.
for us, that's definitely not normal.
And there was another aspect to our topic that we were talking right today, which was where does woman feels like devastated and worn out not to have that much of patience is to have too much of roles to do, too much of things to do. I guess sometimes it's good to just think about what we are doing to our own selves. What are we doing? Is it really worthy to do all of these things and then forget about the most important part of my life, which is my family and my children? We should look back on that aspect as well.
And, you know, as a man, I would say that even men need to understand, like, the role of a mother or of a woman. You know, what are the needs? What should be done? Because it's not just a one-sided. It's not just like the woman has to do everything here, right?
Yeah.
It's a two-sided sort of relationship here. And both parties need to understand each other and their needs. If they don't, that's where there will be conflict. That's where there will be problems. So even as a man.
And they have to cooperate.
Yeah. They have to cooperate. There's so much going on here. And in that sense, then the Quran says, if you do those things, then the Quran says that, you know, then a husband and wife become a source of peace for each other. On the other hand, the Quran says that your spouse and your child could become fitna or a trial
exactly.
for you,
yeah.
right? They're all like tests and trials for us. we succeed in them, then we'll have a good life, right?
Yeah, that's the gist, I suppose. So just try to think about what you're doing and then prioritize. I think that would make everything pretty much clear for you. So this was all. Thank you for being with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. But this waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Palestinian children and minors freed from Israeli jails as part of the prison exchange deal are now saying they were subjected to torture in captivity and that several fellow captives were beaten to death by the Israeli prison authorities. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Turkey's Anadolu News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. A transnational and anti-imperialist organization warned that Palestinian women and men are subjected to rape, sexual violence and torture in Israeli jails. In its reports, the AF3IRM compiled multiple press sources and first-hand accounts from Palestinian captives in Israeli jails. Asra Ja'abi said, upon her release from an Israeli jail, "I left little girls in my prison cell crying. But why? Because unspeakable things are happening to them there, unimaginable things at the hands of Israeli soldiers." Freed prisoner Lama Khater also said that she was blindfolded and threatened with rape as a form of intimidation against her. The report cited another freed female Palestinian captive as saying that over 15 Palestinian women were sexually assaulted by Israeli prison authorities, who sought to force a confession out of them. According to the report, the occupying regime's authorities even keep videotapes of the raping to blackmail of the abductees following their release. The AF3IRM noted that even male captives were sexually abused, adding that sex trafficking is an elevated threat for Palestinians in Israeli jails. Freed captive Ramzi al-Abbasi said, "The situation in the prison is devastating. The Palestinian captives are abused. They're constantly beaten. They're being sexually assaulted. They're being raped. The report came as 240 Palestinians abducted by the Israeli regime and kept in jails and 105 Israeli captives held in Gaza were released as part of a temporary truce reached last month between Hamas and the Tel Aviv regime. The truce, which began on 24th of November and ended on Friday 1st of December, had paused the brutal Israeli airstrikes and fighting in the Gaza Strip, which began on 7th of October. There are reportedly more than 8,000 Palestinians held in Israeli jails. Hundreds of the inmates have been incarcerated under the practice of administrative detention. Human rights organizations say the Israeli regime violates all rights and freedoms granted to captives by the 4th Geneva Convention. They say administrative detention violates their right to due process, since the evidence is withheld from captives while they're held for lengthy periods of time without being charged, without being tried in a court of law, and without being convicted. Palestinian detainees have continuously resorted to open-ended hunger strikes in an attempt to express outrage at their detention. Israeli jail authorities keep Palestinian prisoners under deplorable conditions without proper hygienic standards. Palestinian inmates have also been subject to systematic torture, harassment, and repression. The Middle East Eye has also covered the same story and tells us more. Palestinian children freed from Israeli jails as part of a prison exchange deal between Hamas and the Israeli regime say they have been subjected to torture in captivity and that several fellow detainees were beaten to death by Israeli prison authorities. The Palestinian teenagers are among 39 Palestinians freed from Israeli detention recently in the third prison exchange between Israel and Hamas, while the latter released 13 Israelis held in the Gaza Strip. The exchange took place for the third straight day amid a temporary four-day truce in Gaza, the first such halt in fighting since the hostilities began on 7th of October. Khalil Muhammad Badr al-Zamira, an 18-year-old teenager, was among those released. He was 16 years old when he was kidnapped by the Israeli military and jailed. He said Palestinian captives are being mistreated and beaten in Israeli prisons, and there is no different treatment for children. He told the Middle East Eye, they didn't differentiate between old and young. Two teenagers were transferred from Offa prison with broken ribs. They were unable to move. Likewise, Omar al-Atshan, a freed Palestinian teenager, said he was mistreated whilst in Israeli prison and he was tortured in Naqab prison, where he had been held prior to his release. Omar al-Atshan told the Al Jazeera television network during a live coverage of an event, he said, the mistreatment was indescribable. He said during their release, Israeli soldiers ordered them to lower their heads and then beat them. He added, our happiness is not complete because there are other captives still in Israeli detention. One captive in particular, which he identified as Tha'er Abu Asab, was beaten to death in Israeli jail. Omar al-Atshan added, he was subjected to too much beating. We cried for help, but doctors arrived after an hour and a half after he was already martyred from torture. Omar al-Atshan said he was tortured because of a question. He asked the jail warden whether there was a truce. Then he got beaten to death. Another freed Palestinian child, Osama Marmash, also gave a similar testimony to Al Jazeera television. The 16-year-old teenager was held in Megiddo prison before he was released. He told Al Jazeera that four Palestinian captives were tortured to death in the Israeli jail Megiddo. Osama Marmash said he sustained wounds to his foot and back because of the beating that he received in prison. He said, my prison clothes were white, but then they turned red from bloodstains. He said the food he was given in prison was very little, and was inedible. He added that they were mistreated on their journey to the occupied West Bank. He noted, "The road was difficult. They turned off the air conditioning in the bus and we were suffocating." The American broadcaster CNN cable news network has also covered this story and tells us more. According to a report, more than half of those Palestinians released from Israeli jails in exchange for Israeli detainees were never charged. 119 of the freed captives were children, and the remaining 31 were women. According to combined information released by the Palestinian Captives Club and Israeli prison authorities, 33 Palestinian captives were in group release recently, which included 30 Palestinian children who were 18 years old or younger. Out of the 30 teenagers, 29 are boys and one is a 15-year-old Palestinian girl. The Israeli regime often places Palestinians under administrative detention, a widely criticized practice in which a captive is unaware of any charges against them, and the case is not subject to any legal process. According to Israeli and Palestinian human rights groups, at the start of October, more than 1,200 Palestinians were being held in administrative detention in Israeli prisons, the highest figure in more than three decades. Arrests of Palestinians have increased dramatically since the Hamas movement started its Al-Aqsa storm operation on 7th of October. According to the Palestinian Prisoner Society, a non-governmental organization dedicated to addressing the concerns of Palestinian captives in Israeli jails, up to 2,070 arrests were documented in the occupied West Bank and the city of Al-Quds in that month alone. That figure includes 145 Palestinian children and 55 Palestinian women. According to Palestinian Captive Society, there are still more than 7,000 Palestinian captives detained in Israeli prisons.
Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli forces continue to use internationally banned weapons against civilians in Gaza as the death toll for regime's genocide exceeds 20,000. The Hamas military wing says its fighters have destroyed over 40 Israeli military vehicles and killed dozens of regime forces in the past 72 hours. And Yemen warns the U.S. of a harsh response if it takes any military action against the Arab country.